Beloved Bhagwan, on one occasion, a monk called on Matazu and asked him, "Who is the man who does not take all dharmas as his companions?" Matazu replied, "I will tell you this after you have swallowed all the water in the West River." Upon hearing this, the monk was instantaneously awakened, and he stayed for 2 years at Matazu's monastery. At another time, Matazu said, "Every dharma is the dharma of the mind, and every name is a name of the mind. All beings are born by the mind, and so mind is the foundation of all beings. As an example, the shadow of the moon reflected on the water has many shapes, but the real moon is not like that. Likewise, there are various rivers, but the nature of the water is the same. Although there are myriad activities, there is no discrimination in the emptiness. Different things go through the different ways, but the liberated wisdom is one. All are based on one mind. Every dharma is based on the dharma of Buddha. Each dharma is instantly the dharma of realization. And the dharma of realization is things being as they really are. All that come and go and have a rest, or sit and lie down, are the mysterious work, and they don't need a process of time. The scriptures also say, all around, everywhere, instantaneously, there are Buddhas." Matazu continued, "Cultivation is of no use for the attainment of Tao. The only thing that one can do is to be free of defilement. When one's mind is stained with thoughts of life and death, or of deliberate action, that is defilement. The grasping of the truth is the function of everyday-mindedness. Everyday-mindedness is free from intentional action, free from concepts of right and wrong, taking and giving, the finite or the infinite. All our daily activities, walking, standing, sitting, lying down, all response to situations, our dealings with circumstances as they arise, all this is Tao."
मनीषा केयर ऑफ आनंदो सी इज हियर वेयर एल्स सी कैन बी बट सी इज हाइडिंग बिहाइंड ए माइग्रेन. You have to remember yesterday's anecdote. Master Matazu was hiding behind tiredness, that I am too tired to answer this question today. You go to Jizo. The reality was that question cannot be answered. Chiju said, "I am suffering from severe headache. It is better you go to Hayakuja." Haya Kujo simply gave up the secret. He simply said, I don't know. The reason of Manisha's migraine is the questions he has asked. When we come to the question, you will understand why she is having migraine. She has asked on one occasion a monk called on Matazu and asked him, who is the man who does not take all dharmas as his companions? Matazu himself was the man who has denied that I am only the witness. All dharmas are just objects. I witness them. For example, compassion arises in me. I am not compassion. I can see it arising just like smoke arises out of fire, or flames arise out of fire. But I am not it. Any dharma, any virtue is as objective as anything else in the world. Only one thing is not objective in the world, that is your very being, your witnessing self. That can never be made into an object. It is impossible to reduce it into an object. It will always remain the witness and never can become the witnessed. Except this, you cannot say anything more about it. And because it is not attached to any dharma, any attribute, it has an eternal life. It has an immortality. And it has a reach into the very depths of the universe. Matazu was himself the man. The monk is asking on Matazu, who is the man who does not take all dharmas as his companions? He must be angry, because there are other Buddhist schools which say that all the dharmas belong to yourself. Compassion, love, truth, all the dharmas are attributes of your being, branches of your own being, flowers of your own being, and that is a far bigger majority opinion. Matazu is unique in his understanding that only one thing witnessing is the nature of your being. Everything else that can be witnessed falls apart from you. It becomes the other. The moment it is objectified, it becomes the other. The man must have been in anger when he asked this. Matazu replied, I will tell you this after you have swallowed all the water in the West River. Seeing his anger, rather than answering him, Matazu said, just go to the river and swallow all the water of the river. Because even that much water may not be able to quench your anger. And then come back, I will answer you. Upon hearing this, the man suddenly must have become aware of his anger. That is the whole teaching of Zen. Whichever school one belongs, watching is unavoidably the part of the discipline. Suddenly he must have become aware that he has asked the question, not out of a quest, but out of an anger. He calmed down. Suddenly, a tremendous coolness came to him, as if he has already swallowed the whole river. Upon hearing this, the monk was instantaneously awakened. And he stayed for 2 years at Matazu's monastery. Enlightenment is a question of a sudden realization that you are neither anger, nor greed, nor love, nor compassion. Anything that you can name, you are not. You are the unnameable witness, hidden deep inside you. Just reflecting everything that passes by. Just a mirror. I have called this series Matazu, the empty mirror. For the simple reason that his whole teaching is, don't react, just be and reflect. Clouds will come and go. And the sky remains as empty as ever. Clouds don't leave any mark on the empty sky. And just as outside there is this vast empty sky, immeasurable, on the other side, inwards, the same infinity edges. You are standing just in the middle of an outer infinity and an inner infinity. You can move in any direction, either outwards and you will not find any limit, or inwards and you will not find any limit. Science has been struggling for 300 years was determined that there must be a boundary line of the universe. Because to the mind it is not appealing, it seems irrational that something is without boundaries. How it can be without boundaries? The boundaries may be millions of years away, millions of light years away. But that does not matter. It still remains limited. But finally, with Albert Einstein, science accepted its failure. Now we have immensely powerful instruments to find out the farthest star, but even the farthest star is not the limit. Albert Einstein accepted humbly that rational or irrational, what can we do? Existence is unlimited. If anything, we can change our logic and rationality, but we cannot change the universe. The inward infinity is far more mysterious. Just because it is more alive, the deeper you go, the deeper you are going into life, in abundant life, and deeper you go, you find only one quality, that of the mirror. You reflect everything and nothing affects you. Only at this point, a man like Matazu can come to live in the marketplace because he knows his mirror is not any conceptualization. It is now his experience. He knows everything is reflected. People come and go. Riches come and go. The poor become rich. The rich become poor. Things go on happening. But your mirror simply mirrors. Matazu has come to the very root of the problem. If you can understand him, then in a single moment, instantaneously, the awakening can happen to you too. At another time, Matazu said, every dharma is the dharma of the mind, and every name is a name of the mind. All beings are born by the mind, and so mind is the foundation of all beings. As an example, the shadow of the moon reflected in the water has many shapes, but the real moon is not like that. Likewise, there are various rivers, but the nature of the water is the same. Although there are myriad activities, there is no discrimination in the emptiness. Matazu uses the word mind But you have to understand that his mind means empty mind. A mind which is emptiness. Because if the mirror is already full of reflections, it cannot reflect you. The mirror is no more a mirror, it has become a film of a camera. You can take one image on the film and the film is finished, because that image remains on the film. The film is very much identified with the image. The film does not function like the mirror. Empty mind is the origin of all. All the dharmas, every name, all beings, empty mind is the foundation of all things. Realizing that empty mind is the foundation of all things, all that you have to do is to throw away all furniture that you have gathered in your mind. It is all junk. It is destroying your precious spaciousness. Have you ever thought about the word room? Do you know that the word room means spaciousness, roominess? When a room is full of furniture and all kinds of things, and photographs, and flowers, its roominess is covered. It is less roomy, less spacious than its reality. If you remove everything out of the room, it can be described as an empty room, but that is really repeating the word. Room simply means emptiness, spaciousness. That's why Matazu does not repeat two words together, empty mind. To him, mind itself means emptiness. It is another name for emptiness. And out of this emptiness, everything arises. It was thought to be a very mysterious idea, unbelievable. But now science has to concede that the philosophers and the objective scientists have been wrong. The mystics have been right. Now they can see, and you can see in everyday life. Have you ever taken a seed and cut it into two, do you find any roses inside it? Or do you find any kind of foliage? You find simply nothingness. But the same seed, given the right opportunity and climate, the right soil and a loving gardener, as the spring comes, will start sprouting those green leaves that come in the beginning. Because you are so much accustomed of seeing all this that you don't see the mystery of it. From where those two leaves are coming, you have looked into the seed, there were no leaves in it, no roses in it. And now a great foliage of thousands of leaves and hundreds of flowers, from where? From nowhere. From emptiness of existence they arise. And then, one day, the flowers disappear, the leaves fall away, the tree disappears. Where it has all gone? Again to rest into emptiness. Now science is agreeing that even great stars and their greatness is really shocking even to think. We think them as small stars. They are not small. They are very far away. That's why they look small. Our own sun is a star. It is 600 times bigger than our earth. And it is considered to be, in the universe of stars, a mediocre star, a middle class fellow. Because there are thousands of times bigger stars than this. And every day hundreds of stars are dying. But where they disappear? And hundreds of stars are born. So the balance remains. From where? Just within these 20 years, they have found and made the whole science such a mystery. They have found black holes first, that there are black holes in the sky. What they are exactly, nobody knows. But if any star comes close to a black hole, the black hole has a gravity thousands of times more than the earth. The star simply goes into the black hole and disappears. Just a moment before it was there in its immense glory, and just a moment afterwards there is just nothing but darkness. The star has gone back to rest into emptiness. After the black hole, it was natural and inevitable to find out white holes. Because if the black hole takes stars to emptiness, there must be white holes from where new stars are born. And now they are agreed on the fact that there are white holes which go on throwing new stars. My own feeling is that perhaps it is the same hole on one side black, on another side white. So you jump the door. From one side you are dead, from another side you come out smiling. This is my own feeling. I am not saying that it is scientific. I don't care about science or anything. But this seems to be more possible, rather than black stars far away and white stars far away. That does not look right. They should be close enough. So as the old star becomes empty from the white door, it again gains a new incarnation, again comes back. But as far as emptiness is concerned, nothing makes any mark on it. It remains utterly empty. Different things go through the different ways, but the liberated wisdom is one. All are based on one empty mind. Every dharma is based on the dharma of Buddha. Each dharma is instantly the dharma of realization. And the dharma of realization is things being as they really are. To see things as they really are, you have to be absolutely empty, only a mirror. Your mirror should be clean, without any dust, without any thought, without any prejudice, without any religion, just a pure reflective mirror, and you can see things as they are. And to see things as they are, life becomes a festival, a celebration, a dance. The whole existence is dancing, rejoicing, is drunk completely with blissfulness, except man, who is unnecessarily keeping himself filled with junk in his mind and preventing his mirror to reflect the reality of existence. All that come and go and have a rest or sit and lie down are the mysterious work, and they don't need a process of time. The scriptures also say, all around, everywhere, instantaneously, there are Buddhas. I don't care about scriptures, but I can see everywhere, all around, there are Buddhas. It is not a quotation from any scripture. I can see with my own eyes. You may not be aware. That does not matter. A man of clarity will be able to see your reality. And the function of the master is to point again and again to your reality. It is a kind of harassment. To go on hitting on your head the way a nail is hit in the wall, so that finally you scream and you say, yes, I am a Buddha. Unless you scream and say, I am a Buddha, the master is going to hammer the nail in your head. But most people, just seeing the hammer, immediately realize that what is the point, unnecessary suffering? Why not be a Buddha? That's how I became a Buddha. Seeing that if other fellows are becoming Buddhas instantaneously, why should I waste time? And the day I recognized that there is no need of any effort, I am a born Buddha, since that time, not for a single moment a doubt has arisen. I have tried myself to doubt the fact that just think twice. You may not be a Buddha. But I have been a failure. That instantaneous experience of Buddhahood has gone so deep that now no doubt arises. On the contrary, every day I go on becoming more and more. Beyond doubt, beyond any question, and strangely enough, since the day I became aware of my Buddhahood, all misery has disappeared, all suffering has disappeared, I don't have any tensions. I don't think about tomorrow. Just after harassing you a little, I will go to sleep. Not even thinking that there is going to be another sunrise. In the morning, when Nirvana wakes me, I say, my God, again? The whole day. And in the evening, the same harassment of poor Buddhas. An unnecessary effort, if you understand, just recognize it yourself. Don't let me harass you. Matazu continued, cultivation is of no use for the attainment of Tao. Call it Tao or the Buddha or the Dhamma, it is the same. Cultivation is of no use. Don't try to cultivate. Just be. One day try at least not cultivating. Just for 24 hours, give me a chance. Be a Buddha, whatever happens. And I don't think you will come back again to be a non-Buddha. 24 hours, if you can maintain your Buddhahood, whatever happens, your wife escapes. Don't be worried. A Buddha does not get worried. At the most, you can do one thing which is proper. Go to the post office and report that your wife has escaped. Don't go to the police station. Because the police station is a dangerous place, they may bring your wife back. And whoever she has gone with is your best friend. Just relax and enjoy that how grateful I am to the universe. It happens to very few rare individuals. Wife and escaping. Most wives killing so hard that they take all juice out of you. You are just moving. Without any juice. To be a Buddha, it is perfectly good. It is absolutely necessary that somebody should escape with your wife. One of my friends who presented me my first car, after 1 year he asked me, that do you get angry sometimes? Because I have never seen a driver who will not get angry on the Indian roads. I said, let it be on record, because no Buddha before has ever driven a car. I simply see the things as they are. The road is rotten. And it is going to be more rotten tomorrow. In 40 years of independence, it has been going down and down and down. Nobody seems to be interested that roads have to be repaired. Nobody follows the traffic laws because it is a free country. You are blessed if you come back home alive. Yes, you can go in Pune and see the traffic. That's why I lie down in my room. Why unnecessarily get into a trouble? But I told my friend that I don't get angry. What is the point? Getting angry at the road? I don't get angry with the strange traffic that goes on around. It is a free country. Everybody is free to follow his own ideas. Somebody follows to the left, somebody follows to the right, and there are people who follow in the middle. But not much problem. In countries where traffic rules are very strict, the rate of accidents is more than India. That is miracle. It has been found that in America, where traffic rules are very strict, and you cannot drive more than 55 miles per hour, more people die out of accidents than in India, where you can drive anywhere you like. And where on the road, it is not 20th century, all the centuries together. A bullock cart is going, somebody is having a camel car, an elephant is moving. And dogs have freedom in India as they have nowhere else in the world. And children are playing football in the road. Still, one goes to the office, one comes back alive. I don't go anywhere, but every morning I am surprised. That my God. Again, but there is no anger, there is no complaint, there is no grudge. I will enjoy one day more. There must be one morning I will not wake up. I will enjoy that too. I simply enjoy the idea that you are all trying to wake me up. And I simply don't wake up. The same game that I have been trying whole life. Trying to wake you up and nobody is waking. One day you will be in the same position. Matazu says, the only thing that one can do is to be free of defilement. When one's mind is stained with thoughts of life and death, or deliberate action, that is defilement. You can see his use of the mind is equivalent to no mind. When the mind becomes defiled with thoughts of life and death or deliberate action, that is defilement. Then the mind is full of imagination, hearts, of emotions, of sentiments, of past memories, of future utopias, and the mirror is completely lost in layers of dust. You don't have to cultivate anything, you have just to drop all this dust that has gathered on your mirror. The grasping of truth is not something special. It is the function of everyday mindedness. Just keep your mind undefiled and the whole world looks so clean, so pure, so immensely beautiful that you cannot but be grateful. Everyday mindedness is free from intentional action, free from concepts of right and wrong. Taking and giving, the finite or the infinite, all our daily activities, walking, standing, sitting, lying down, all response to situations, our dealings with circumstances as they arise, all this is Tao. Matasu is against, just as I am against, of escaping from the world, of renouncing the world, Those people are not saints, they have simply chickened out. They could not encounter the existence with a right, clean mirror. They escaped, being afraid that they will be defiled by others. Nobody can defile you. It is only you. If you allow dust to gather on your mirror, there will be defilement. If you don't allow dust, there is a Zen story. A Zen master sent his chief disciple to a caravansaray for his last examination. The disciple said, "What kind of examination is this? What I am to do in that caravansaray?" He said, "You just go and watch whatever is happening there and bring the news to me. That is going to decide whether you are going to be my successor or not." He went to the caravansaray. He watched everything. It was a question of tremendous importance. What he brought made him the successor. He brought this, that I saw that the owner of the caravansaray cleans the mirror each evening, and again in the morning he cleans the mirror. So I asked him that you had cleaned it just few hours before, why you are cleaning it again? The owner said, "The dust goes on gathering every moment. So clean the mirror whenever you have time. You will always find some dust which has gathered. And I have come to the conclusion that you were right to send me to the caravansaray. This is actually the case with mine. Clean every moment, because every moment, just by the nature of itself, dust goes on gathering. If you can avoid defilement, there is no need of any cultivation. You will realize the ultimate truth, the Tao." A Zen haiku. Entering the forest, he moves not the grass. Entering the water, he makes not a ripple. He is talking about the full moon. A full moon entering into the forest, he moves not even the grass. So silently, his movement is so graceful that not even the grass is disturbed. Entering the water as a reflection, he he makes not a ripple. And that is the state of the awakened man, the Buddha. Even entering into the marketplace, he makes no ripples. Wherever he is just undefiled mirror. Nothing disturbs him. Nothing becomes attached to it like a cloud. Everything comes and goes, and the mirror remains all the time empty. If you can be empty, you are enlightened. Such a simple and obvious phenomenon. It does not need any cultivation. Now, the question that has created Manisha a migraine, and Anando has to represent her. She has asked beloved Bhagwan a situation that occurred last night was such a vivid illustration for me of how you are, as we have heard of Mataji, a living, teaching master of Zen, a man of Tao. When the horse came trotting into the hall, anyone in your place who was anything less than enlightened would have been disconcerted to find that the attention has moved from them. They may have felt distracted, thrown off center, afraid of looking foolish because they could not see what the cause of the laughter was. You simply stopped talking and allowed events to take a new course. You looked so vulnerable, so innocent and unknowing. In those moments, your immense power and extraordinary fragility, your absolute presence and your utter absence were so apparent. This is not really a question. I just wanted an excuse to make sure the incident did not go unrecorded. This question, which is not a question, has created poor Manisha a migraine, because she must have felt how she is going to read it to me. But she is perfectly right, and she need not be worried that just for the record she has asked a question which is not a question. In Manisha, I have found a better recorder than Ramakrishna has found in Vivekananda, or even Socrates has found in Plato. She records everything perfectly well. That's why she has become shy. It is not migraine. Tomorrow she will be here again. There is no need to be afraid. You can ask anything to me. You can give any record of events I enjoyed last night's episodes. It is not only that I was annoyed, I was enjoying it so tremendously because it was such an unexpected phenomenon. I thought perhaps Kalki, the White House, has come, because his time is close. Just 12 years more. By the end of this century, Kalki is going to come. So I thought if he has come here, it is really great moment. And here, there will be no need for him to make any judgments, because all are sinners. And it came a little early, because inside him was great Avirbhava. And Avirbhava's associate, Anando. And naturally, inside that heart, you cannot remain long. One must be feeling suffocated. So they came a little early. It was Anando who was pulling Manis. Avirbhava begged that this is not time, but Avirbhava jumped in. It would have been a great accident if the horse has fallen asleep. That would have been absolutely against the tradition. And somebody would have put a case against me that their religious feelings are hurt. Kalki breaking down in the middle. But they both managed perfectly well. Now, soon I will be sending Avirbhava to find. There are quotes available for lions, for tigers, for elephants. Just you have to be a little patient and don't run out of the track. Don't enter the crowd. In most of the circuses, where you see the lion roaring, you just watch a little closely. So many lions are not available. I have heard about one case, a man asked for employment in a circus. The manager said it is a very dangerous job. One lion has died. So you will have to enter into his skin and behave like a lion, and you will be surrounded by real lions. It is a dangerous job. I make you aware from the very beginning. He was so desperate, he accepted the job. The salary was good. But as he entered into the skin of the lion and he was led into the cage, he freaked out. There was another lion just roaring. So he started shouting, "Help me!" Whole crowd that has gathered to see has never seen such a scene, that a lion is asking for help in perfect English. And the other lion said to him, "You idiot, don't freak out. Otherwise, we both will lose the job." He used to be the headmaster, and this other fellow used to be the teacher in his school, and they both have lost their jobs. You can find, Avirbhava, good lions, tigers, elephants, crocodiles, and all kinds of weirdos. Your museum of the gods has to become one of the richest museums in the world. In fact, there is no comparison anywhere. Nobody has bothered to collect information about ancient gods, modern gods. Today, you were hearing the sound on the street. It is for the elephant god. It is such a humiliation of man that he has been forced to worship any kinds of animals rather than helping him to become a Buddha. They are forcing him to become lower than animals. Our effort is to expose all those religions who have exploited man, insulted man, humiliated mankind. Manisha, your recording is perfectly good. Next time, when you feel the migraine, it still come. When people will do 2 minutes gibberish, throw away your migraine, somebody will catch it. Just throw away far. Everybody is trying a double way. He is throwing his things out and moving his hands, protecting himself, because others are also throwing all kinds of bullshit. One has to protect oneself. Just exchanging your bullshit will not help. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. It is such a sad story. Saab Jabulansky into his beer at the Fried Fisherman pub. What is the matter? Asked his pal Klopski. It is my kid, Albert, says Jabulansky. For years, day after day, little Albert and his dog have gone to school together. Until sadly, the day came when they had to part. What happened? Exclaims Klopski. Well, says Jablonski, the dog graduated. It is that fateful night when Jesus has been nailed to the cross. He has been up there for about 5 hours. When he looks down with surprise, no, no, he shouts, get away, get away. But it does not do no good. Then he starts really freaking out. He screams again, go away. But it does not work. The cross starts shaking and leaning, and it falls over Jesus Christ, fucking beavers. Doctor Skin Bags, patients keep calling him in the middle of the night. So one weekend, he has a talk with his wife Sally. Listen, says Skin Bag, I am completely worn out. I need some peace and quiet. If any of my patients call, just tell them that I am out of town at a medical meeting. That night, the phone rings at 2 o'clock. Sally Skinbag answers it and tells the caller that Dr. Skinbag is out of town. But Mrs. Skinbag, my granddad is coughing and spluttering, and I don't know what to do, says Mrs. Klutz, the caller. "Just a minute," says Sally, covering the phone and asking Dr. Skinberg what to tell Mrs. Klutz. "Tell her to put the old guy into his iron lung," says Skinberg. "Mrs. Klutz," says Sally into the phone, "put your granddad into the iron lung." "I thank you, Mrs. Skinberg," replies Mrs. Klutz, "but for how long?" "Just a minute," says Sally as she turns to Skinberg again. "Tell her for half an hour," says Skinberg. "Put him in for half an hour," repeats Sally into the phone. "I thank you," replies Mrs. Klutz, "but I just have one more question for you. Is that guy you are in bed with also a doctor?" Old Lady Muffet's proudest possession is her beautiful white Persian cat named Conrad. But Grandma Muffet notices that Conrad has been missing for 2 days. When she goes to the freezer that night for dinner, she nearly dies of shock. There is Conrad sitting on a plate, frozen solid. Grandma frantically calls her vet, Dr. Ratso, and asks what she should do. "There is still a chance to save the poor animal," says Dr. Ratso. "Give it 2 teaspoons of gasoline." With trembling hands, Grandma Muffet cracks open Conrad's frozen lips and carefully spoons in the doctor's strange prescription. The seconds tick by, nothing happens. Grandma is just about to give up hope when suddenly the cat's eyes pop open. It lets out an ear-piercing scream and flies across the room at 300 miles per hour. It runs over all the furniture, scratches up and down the walls, and dashes across the ceiling. The cat streaks around the apartment like a furious hurricane, then suddenly stops dead in its tracks, not moving a muscle. Quickly, Grandma phones Dr. Ratso again. "What do you think happened?" she cries. "Simple," replies Ratso. "He just ran out of gas." Never been known. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Look inwards with absolute urgency, as if this is the moment of life and death. Without a total urgency, you cannot reach to the innermost center of your being. Remember, there may be no other time. This may be the last moment. Deeper and deeper, without any fear, move into the center like an arrow. It is your own life source, and it is also the life source of the whole universe. This is the ultimate home. The Buddha. The empty mirror of Mata's womb. Just be a witness, a clean mirror reflecting everything without any judgment. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax. And see, your body is not you. Your mind is not you. You are just a witness. This witness I have called the mirror. This is your eternity. This is your ultimate nature of Buddhahood. Once you have tasted it, once you have walked the path to the life stream, you will never be the same again. Finally, you have to awaken as a perfect Buddha. To the eyes of a Buddha, the whole existence becomes enlightened. The green of the trees become greener. The fragrance of the roses takes a new nuance. The full moon in the night reflects in your mirror without creating any ripples. The whole life becomes a festival, a ceremony. a rejoicing. This evening and this silence makes it a beautiful experience. You are all dissolved into one oceanic consciousness. Separation is forgotten. Oneness is remembered. Carry this ecstasy, this drunkenness, 24 hours around the clock. Accept this, there is no other religion. Now come back, but come back as a Buddha without any hesitation, silently and peacefully, with the grace and beauty of a Buddha. Just recollect the experience. You have to live it moment to moment, day and night. Speaking or in silence, working or resting. But the Buddha remains a constant undercurrent in you. Then you don't need any morality, you don't need any religion, you don't need anything. You have got the very key, the master key, that opens the doors of all the mysteries of existence. Okay, Manisha, care of Ananda. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.